You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 28th of November. We'll take a look at Donovan Mitchell's night in Brooklyn, his return to the floor, build off some of the statistical stuff we talked about yesterday, and we'll look around the NBA. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA Insider. It's great to be with you today on this, I don't even know what day of the week it is anymore. It's a Wednesday. I'm coming to you from New York City, so this should post for you nice and early. Then I'm going to get out, experience a little bit of New York before we go play Brooklyn tonight. I'm the radio voice of the Jazz, Jazz NBA Insider. This is your daily Utah Jazz podcast, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers. Available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or any of your smart speakers. All right, a bunch of stuff I want to get to. Today's show is brought to you by The Store, as well as Shamrock Auto. Good people over at Shamrock Auto had such optimism on the Jazz. I wonder how Rob's doing. I'll have to check in with him and see what he thinks is going on. All right, Donovan returns tonight. Really cool event yesterday, by the way. Eric Woodyard had it really well covered, in which the Adidas introduced its latest shoe, spring summer 2019, and it's called the Next Level with all the E's as threes, and it's a laceless basketball sneaker, and it also has some new technology to it called Light Strike. Pretty good looking. Donovan seems to be the lead, one of the lead guys on it, and pretty awesome. To have a Utah Jazz, big deal actually, to have a Utah Jazz player involved in that. Everyone says that the event was great, talking to people that were there. And again, kind of credit to this group, Jay Crowder, George Niang, Alec Burks, Epe Udo, Ricky Rubio, Royce O'Neal were all there to support Donovan. So, you know, having lost a few games, been on a long flight, delayed a little bit as we came out. And then you have the willingness of everyone to go out like that, kind of a cool deal. So, and you know, for the Utah Jazz standpoint, to have a player, a Jazz player, be a marquee shoe person is really super important to our franchise. These things matter to these guys a great deal, and to show that you can actually have that take place, and be in Utah is important. It's a cool shoe. Because it's laceless, the front comes up pretty far and has a snugness to it on the front that's different than what you've ever seen before. So it's worth taking a look at. Donovan's not heavily promoted inside of the Adidas site. They don't seem to have many players on the Next Level webpage. But it's an important moment for the Jazz, in the sense that you are capable of having this type of exposure and still being in Utah. All right, let's look at Donovan this year. I went and dug into Donovan because he's Donovan and we're obsessed with watching every single thing Donovan does, frankly, probably at an unhealthy level. I thought a few things were interesting and encouraging. Pre-injury, pre-Minnesota hamstring tightness followed by ankle injury in Denver, followed by rib contusion sometime that no one's quite sure when it took place, or we'll know tonight because somebody will ask. He was shooting 45% from the field, 36% from three, and 23 points per game. That is the exact jump. That is the exact jump that everyone had hoped he was going to take this year. Since the injuries, he's shooting 41% from the field, 27% from three. So down 4 in field goal percentage, 9 in three-point percentage, and 19 points per game. So down 4 points per game. And then that's where he doesn't seem right. Yeah, he probably got physically beat up early in the year. For whatever reason, early in the season, he had a hamstring tweak and a significant ankle injury against Denver a few nights later and hasn't been the same since. Okay, that makes total sense. that's the reality of what he, but I think the most important thing is looking back at what he did in the first seven games. And some of them weren't brilliant, but the collective body of those games is exactly what everybody, you know, dreamed of. There's a fantasy land that he's never gonna have a bad night again. But that those are pretty good numbers. Digging even next level on this with Donovan, his percentage of assisted shots and wide open shots have decreased considerably. So last year, 66% of his three-point shots were assisted. This year, it's 52%. His wide open threes, 6 feet or more, have dropped from 20% of his shots to 14% of his shots. That's not surprising because he's Donovan Mitchell at this point, but it's a lot. What is surprising to me when I did this is, I mean, people by New Orleans last year were pretty aware of who Donovan Mitchell is. So I then decided to break it out and look at the last 40 games of last season when it was abundantly clear, or last 30 games of last season when it was abundantly clear who Donovan Mitchell was. And this gets interesting. So percentage of shots wide open threes for the season last year was 20%. For the last 30 games was 17%. And for this season is 14%. So that shows a renewed interest an interest 30 games in and then a totally different level once with an offseason to prepare. So 20% of all shots were wide open in 17-18 for threes. All of his shots. 17% for the last 30 games and 14% this year. Okay, that's a big difference. Percentage of field goals made assisted. 38% last year. 38% in the last 30 games. 32% this year. So that's not a trick. That's new to this season. Is the percentage of field goals made by Donovan are assisted. And the locations of those shots specifically show up. So specifically, the percentage of assisted above the break threes have dropped from 59% of his above the break threes were assisted, and this year it's only 48%. And what is the trend on that? 59%, 57% in the last 30 games, 48% this year. That's a huge change. So a drop of 11 percentage points of assisted above the break threes from a year ago. That's either, could be anything, could be the offense, could be defense, obviously. Could be Donovan feeling a burden and a desire to match and not quite really understanding exactly what it was that he did last year. All of those things are completely positive. All right, I got some more discoveries on that that I want to bring your direction. Today's show is brought to you by The Store. It's 6200 South and 20th East. The Store is home of the Mudslide Cookie. And I introduced Coach Quinn Snyder to the Mudslide Cookie and Ron Boone to the Mudslide Cookie on the plane. Yes, I stopped by, got a bunch of extra Mudslide Cookies, brought them onto the plane last night, shared them with Coach, gave me something. I responded by giving him a Mudslide Cookie, which is a really big sacrifice on my part, by the way. I don't know that Coach Quinn understood the magnitude of my giving there. Like, he got something from me, which was awfully nice of him, and coffee-related, so that I'm pleased. And so I felt the need to pay him back. So I went in and got one of my Mudslide Cookies and had it sent up the plane to the coach on a nice little white plate like it should be because it's a divine piece of creation. I don't know. He's very appreciative. He's a very nice man. I don't know if he truly understands the magnitude of what I really gave him there in a Mudslide Cookie. Ron Boone liked it as well. Coach liked it. Mudslide Cookie is over at their bakery. Stop by the store, 6200 South, 20th East. You'll feel the local home feeling of a community grocery store with incredible effort to make sure that they're always bringing in local people, have their own bakery over to the right-hand side that has all these great cookies, including the Mudslide cookie, which should be the number one cookie sold in the world because it's the greatest cookie ever. Dark chocolate, fudgy, with chocolate chips inside of it. Just amazing. Right behind it, they've got, talk about the locals, the Great Rich's Bagels. You can get those there. The June pies are then over to your right-hand side. Cake de Fleurs we had at the house recently. Lots of fun sweets for you over there. And then if you head back, all the great meats in the back. We got our turkey from the store at 6200 South and 20th East. And then back left-hand corner is all the daily sandwiches and rolls and things that are made up custom for the chef, from the chef each and every day. It's at the store, 6200 South and 20th East. All right, so looking at some more Donovan items on kind of when I did my deep dive. My biggest deep dive is we probably should just let him be. But we're not really about to do that. So Donovan's off the three game. He takes the seventh most amount of off-the-bounce threes in the NBA. There are 20 players that take two or more. Of those, Donovan's shooting is 14th. Following players are lower: Devin Booker, C.J. McCollum, Zach LaVine, Kyrie Irving, Drew Holiday, and Trae Young. What that speaks to me is how hard this shot is. His percentage is the same as it was last year and the same as it was the last 30 games of last year. I mean, Dame Lillard shoots 31.5% on these shots. These are hard shots. Off the bounce three is really not a, you know, at 31% is 0.9 points per shot. It's not, you know, frankly, if you're shooting your mid-range shot at 45, which Donovan is, there's not a huge difference there in your points per game on those shots. I mean, what you're really trying to get is those catch and shoot threes, and we just talked about how those are becoming incredibly difficult for Donovan to get. Donovan's off the bounce three, 29.3% last year, 28.6 in the last part of last year, 29.4 this year. The interesting one on Donovan that I haven't talked about is his mid-range shooting is way up. He's shooting 48% from the mid-range. You know, if he's shooting 48% from the mid-range, it actually mathematically makes sense that he steps in and takes that mid-range shot instead of always having to take the off-the-bounce three. Ideally, he gets better at it. QSQ, quantified shot quality, 50.4%. And last year, his effective field goal percentage was negative 0.3 below it, so virtually the same. This year, his QSQ is down 1.7 points of percentage, 1.7 percentage points. In other words, he's not getting as clean a look as he got a year ago. Defenses have adjusted. And he's 1.6 lower than his expected shot quality. So now, in the last 30 games last year, Donovan's QSQ was 49.8. So this is and he was 1.2 lower than effective field goal percentage. So this is kind of, for the season last year, he was at 50.4 and much higher for the first 50 games of the year and shot about that level. And then defenses zeroed in on him, and his shot quality went to 49.8. Now it's at 48.7, so that's a pretty good drop, and he's below that. In his first 50 games of last season, his QSQ was 50.8, and he was 1.5 points above his QSQ. QSQ is quantified shot quality. It's basically what you should shoot based on where the defender is and where you are on the floor if you are an average player. So in the first 50 games of last year, when he was fresh, before he got tired, before the defenses went crazy on him, his shot quality was a 50.8, if he just average. It dropped to 49.8, one whole percentage point, by the time for the second 30 games of the season, and it dropped another percentage point this season when teams had an offseason to prepare for him. He's just living a really different world. I think it has to do with the assisted above the break three, which means it's catch and shoot instead of off the bounce. Last year, during that first 50 games, 61% of his above the break 3-point shots were assisted, and it's 48% this year. Okay, so that's a pretty big difference. He's shooting a higher percentage at the rim. So his overall percentage of threes attempts, their catch and shoot, 44% last year, 41% the last 30 games, 39% this year. He is also not shooting at the rim as much. 26% of his shots at the rim last season, 22% this season. That little floater zone in the paint, non-restricted area, he's taking gone from 15% of his shots to 22% of his shots. It's a pretty big jump. So let me just sum this up and then talk a little bit about what we talked about yesterday, and then we'll look around the NBA. So the summation is he's taking fewer shots at the rim, and he's taking about one fewer shots at the rim and taking a shot in the floater zone. That's changing from a 61% shot to a 36% shot. That's going to hurt your percentages. The second is he was taking 11% of his three-point shots as corner threes, where he made 50% last year, which was an unnaturally high number. He's down to taking half as many, from 11% of his shots to 5% of his shots, and he's making 33%. So those are two location items where his shots are different. He is no longer getting open looks. Last year, nearly 20% of his three-point shots were wide open, and this year it's down to 14%, and he's no longer getting as many assisted looks. His catch and shoot percentage has dropped from 41% to 30% of shooting on catch and shoots because he's not getting open looks. So that's, it's a new world for him. This is exactly what happens to players year one to year two. It's why everyone says you have a sophomore slump. You don't. Defenses are good, and they adjust, and they figure out things, and these are the best coaches in the world with the best players in the world, and they change what you're doing. And that's what happens. Yesterday, I talked about the Jazz defense, quantified shot quality again, QSQ, and how unlucky we're getting, particularly on mid-range shots. I want to discuss something that I think is slightly flawed in that analysis. Against Indiana, the Pacers run a high pick and roll. Collison comes off it. Miles Turner flares back. Collison flips it back out to Turner. Perfectly in rhythm, Miles Turner shoots a 45%, what should be a 41% mid-range jumper, and he makes three in a row. And he's perfectly in rhythm. No real impact from the Jazz defensively other than Collison comes off the pick. The Jazz adjust their defensive players like they want to. Turner flashes back. Collison makes a perfect pass. In rhythm, easy shot. That, on paper, looks like the exact same shot as if the Jazz blow up that play. The Pacers run around dribbling through some plays uncomfortably, out of their rhythm, flare it to Thaddeus Young, who's at the exact same spot on the floor, 17 feet out, or even Miles Turner, same exact spot on the floor, but not in rhythm of the offense, not a simple one-pass possession, not a simple... The Jazz defense has impacted the play, altered a little bit of what they're doing, and while on paper the defender is the same distance away, the shooter is shooting from the same spot, and it looks to be the same shot. QSQ would judge that as the exact same shot. The fact that it has... Now, maybe QSQ, I don't think it counts for shot clock time, and that can have a little bit of an impact. QSQ would look at that as the exact same shot as Miles Turner in perfect rhythm off one pass with limited work in that possession. And so while I think there's a sign that the Jazz are getting unlucky, I think the bigger sign is that the Jazz are not impacting possessions defensively in the same capacity that they did a year ago. I think they had a bigger impact on possessions and broke teams' rhythms. One of the things I talked about a lot last year was how often I thought players like a Victor Oladipo or an Evan Fournier or players of that sort were taking shots in spots on the floor where they were not in their usual rhythm. You would take them, instead of them getting five rim shots during the day, they would suddenly take two or three rim shots, and then they take an extra above the break three and two extra mid-range shots, and they were out of their usual rhythm. That does not seem to be happening. And so I think that there's a little bit of something that's misleading and flawed in that number, in the sense that you can impact the rhythm even if on paper where you shoot from and how far the defenders are is the same as it would be on something as easy as that pick and pop by Miles Turner. And I don't think the Jazz are doing that as well. Now, I would have to go watch an awful lot of film to be able to discover that, and that's not I don't really have time for that. And I, you know, find out if that's true. That's a hypothesis that probably needs to be proven out and might not be true. Today's show is brought to you by Shamrock Auto Group. My buddy Rob was so optimistic about the Jazz when he started. He wanted to have a deal with you where the Jazz won the championship. He was giving you extra deals. That seems like it's not as good an offer as it was when the season started right now. I don't think any of us are thinking of the, you know, he was like, you know, I mean, we can handle the Warriors. He was so fired up. And you have to love Rob for that. It's the same passion he brings to the Shamrock Auto Group, where they have better cars, no dramas, no hassle, great pricing. They can get you any truck or sedan. Locked On Jazz listeners, you are getting a $1,000 cash bonus to the Jazz win the championship. But how about right now I tell you instead about the free lifetime 7-day cooler comparable to a Yeti. It's a lifetime's a Utah company. Shamrock Auto Group is an independent dealership. They do most of their cars are 6 to 12 months old, 5 to 20,000 miles. There's the Yukon, the Suburbans, big SUVs. They're going to get for you reliable sedans. And if you look at their reviews, you just get absolutely fabulous reviews, whether it's Tracy Hutchinson's talking about Kellen, the salesman, and what a great personality and he had, whether it's people like Lizzie Tomlinson writing about their experience and probably Kellen again because of the fact that it's about another great salesperson. Check them all out. Shamrock Auto Group. It's out in Pleasant Grove, and they have the 80 years of combined experience of their staff in the automotive business. A buyer who's been a technician for over 25 years leads to a lean company that gives you absolutely fabulous interactions. You can call Rob at 801-319-2250. And if you have a specific car you want, he'll go get it for you. 801-319-2250 or check out Shamrock Auto Group in Pleasant Grove. All right. I wanted to look around the NBA for a second. There were some interesting games last night, and Denver kind of clicked back in after their little doldrums blew out the Lakers, 117-85. I'm not sure I know who the Lakers are. I think I know who Denver is. Toronto beat Memphis in Memphis last night, 122-114. Marc Gasol sprained an ankle. Detroit keeps winning, by the way, on the over in the Eastern Conference. Detroit's kind of got a top five record of the season. They have not played a lot of games. They're a little bit more rested than everybody else in the league. But it's interesting. If you look at some of the trends, you know, we're 20 games in. The one thing I kind of liked looking at was the last 10 games, which, again, in our case, scheduling can have a huge impact in a small sample size like this. So you have to be a little careful on what you're looking at. But I think there's some interesting little notes on who the best teams in the league have been for the last 10 games. So the Raptors keep clicking along as the number one team in the NBA. Second-ranked offense, ninth defense. Oklahoma City is doing some interesting things. They can't shoot at all. They're 28th in the league in effective field goal percentage. They're right kind of where we are. But they're number one in offensive rebounding. So they're making up for their misses to survive, to be average offensively, and then they have the number one defense in the league. They're actually very similar to what the Jazz were a year ago, or 2 years ago. Milwaukee is the best offense in the league, and their defense is now down to 13th in the last 10 games, but still at their best. Denver, as I said, has clicked in. They're really playing well. They're the fourth best team overall in the NBA over the last 10 games, according to net rating, eighth offensively and sixth defensively. Dallas, second best defensive team over the last 10 games, 14th offense, second defense. The turning point for them was when Rick Carlisle called DeAndre Jordan out for being selfish defensively. Minnesota. So Dallas and Minnesota, two non-Western Conference playoff teams, and the Thunder, who look like they could be, are suddenly all on fire. Minnesota's got the fourth best defense in the NBA over the last 10 games. And then Eastern Conference teams, Orlando and Indiana, are playing well. And what I think is really interesting is over the last 10 games, Boston, despite all their struggles, all everyone's worried about, is 16th-ranked offense, 8th-ranked defense, and 9th overall. And the slowest pace of play team in the last 10 games is the Houston Rockets. And also turning the ball over at a tremendous rate, but the third-best offensive team. We're not good. We're in there with Chicago and Atlanta and New York. The other one that's not good is Portland. Portland, over the last 10 games is suddenly 21st offensively and 28th defensively. Right after I announced, I thought they were real. They have really begun to struggle. Spurs are struggling too. They're suddenly 23rd defensively. I thought just that they'd be able to hold on defensively. And then the Lakers offensively aren't very good. Last 10 games, they're 26th offensively. They're 5th defensively. And maybe the single most interesting thing going on in the NBA right now, in the last 10 games, since Jimmy Butler's joined the Philadelphia 76ers, they're 27th in the league defensively. And Minnesota is 4th. The two flipped. Absolutely 100% flipped where each of them fits in the equation. Jimmy Butler left Minnesota. They became good defensively. Jimmy Butler went to Philadelphia. They became bad defensively. That's an all-defensive player. Wonder what's going on with that. That one's worth chewing on. That's a quick run around the league. We'll be in Brooklyn tonight. The Nets come in as the 11th-ranked offense and the 25th-ranked defense. They're 8-13. They've lost 7 of their last 9. They're missing Chris LeVert. D'Angelo Russell will come at you. They pass the ball a ton and then get into actions. They play the smartest analytic game in the league. They're number 1 at denying 3-point shots, number 6 at taking 3-point shots. They foul a tremendous amount defensively, and they're not a good defensive rebounding team, so the Jazz will have to take advantage of those two things. They're not a particularly good transition team, which is good news for us since that's been a little bit of a scuttlebutt for us. And Jared Allen is way better than you realize. I think you'll leave the night thinking that Jared Allen is really, really good. All right, that wraps us up. Hope you have a great day. I'll talk to you with Ron on the floor, and then we'll be bringing you the broadcast around 5:30 your time on the drive home today. See ya.